Morning, Your Honors. My name is John Lanahan. I'm representing the appellant, Mr. Cruz. There is no dog in this case. Your Honor, the issue here is whether or not the district court erred in imposing consecutive rather than concurrent supervised release terms. And essentially this is the debate in between government counsel and I is focusing on, and down the district court, too, was focusing on the applicability of U.S. versus Jackson. And essentially, Jackson, and I got into in my reply, I think, some very close analysis of the facts of that case, because I think that that case can be distinguished from what the argument that we're making here is. The argument we're making here is that at the time of revocation, in imposing now rendering what were originally concurrent supervised release terms into consecutive prison terms, the district court was resentencing Mr. Cruz and did not have jurisdiction to impose consecutive as opposed to concurrent terms. Now, this issue was discussed by this court in Jackson, but ultimately that was not the issue in Jackson. In Jackson, the issue was, the argument was under 3624E, that because it is presumed at the time supervised release terms are served, that they are supposed to be concurrent, that means when they're revoked, they have to be concurrent. And what this court said in Jackson is, no, the district court can do whatever the district court could have done at sentencing. So that's why looking at the facts of Jackson and looking at the facts of this case are important. In Jackson, there were three cases. Jackson had a case originally in the Central District, and he was sentenced in the Eastern District. Those two cases were found to be related cases under 3D1.2 of the guidelines. So they were ordered to run concurrent, as they would have to, well, now they don't have to anymore in light of Booker and Fanfan, but they're suggested to run concurrent. Then there was a third case, which was totally unrelated, which was in Missouri, which was run concurrent because of cooperation. It had nothing to do with the operation of how they would be related. Jackson then comes back on a revocation, and the district court in the East, they were consolidated in front of the Eastern District, and the Eastern District ran the two supervised release terms in the Central District and the Eastern District concurrent, but imposed a consecutive for the one in Missouri. Now, under the operation of the guidelines, if one went back at the time of initially sentencing, that's exactly what the district court could do because the two cases were related, the Central and the Eastern District. Those would be running concurrent and then would have the option to run the one in Missouri either concurrent or consecutive. Well, in this case, it was in front of the same district court judge, and the district court found, I included the probation report, and the district court found that these were closely related counts that grouped. One was conspiracy to possess and transfer a machine gun, and the other was the actual possession of the machine gun itself. So going back then to the time of what options were going to be available at the district court at the time of resentencing, since they had to be run concurrent as prison terms, I'm saying that the supervised release terms also had to be run.
Because of the grouping rules?
Well, yes, essentially.
Grouping only deals with determining a defendant's offense level. It doesn't have anything to do with imposing consecutive sentences or not.
Well, grouping does if they're closely related because what it says is, yes, it does the total offense level
right.
For the. Right, but if they are closely related counts, what it says is you put it all in one big pile, and ultimately the total sentence, the largest pile, covers everything. And that's what happened in this case. The district court found that the range was 57 to 71 after grouping everything together and imposed 65 months. Now, one is a 10-year max, and I think actually at the time of the original sentencing, everybody was a mistake, as the second count was actually a 5-year max, not a 10-year max, so it couldn't have been a 65-month term. But rather than imposing 10 years plus 5 years, the guidelines say, put it all, if it's closely related under 3D1.2, put it all in one big pile, and whatever the top of the pile is covers everything. If it covers everything, that means it's concurrent. So looking back in terms of the analysis of what would be the options of the district court, now, Judge Trott, you're right in that, and just to focus on it, it does not say that supervised release terms have to run concurrent or consecutive.
Exactly right.
Okay. But what it does say, but there is a presumption in 3624 toward concurrent as opposed to consecutive, and also 3584.
Let's assume you're right. Presumption. That doesn't mean it's a conclusive presumption.
Well, but this, that's true. But at the time,
the court took a look at the facts and circumstances and decided to make it different.
But
is that an abuse of discretion under these facts?
Well, I don't want to answer your question with a question. I'm not talking about now reimposing supervised release. I'm talking about re-imprisonment. I'm talking about a new prison term after supervised release is revoked.
Yeah. What does Rule 35 have to do with this?
Well, Rule 35 says, I mean, my argument is that Rule 35 is that the limitations on resentencing is limited to 7 days, so that by going back and now imposing
35, the way I read it and where I've read it for years, deals with a correction of erroneous sentences. It doesn't say anything at all about sentencing for violation of terms of supervised release.
Well, the only reason why I'm citing Rule 35 is to say, to the extent that the district court has any jurisdiction to modify a sentence after it's imposed, the extent to which there is jurisdiction is Rule 35. I'm not saying
Rule 35 deals with the correction of erroneous sentences.
Rule 35 provides jurisdiction to correct an erroneous sentence.
Right.
Okay. That's the reason why I cite Rule 35 is saying that that is the only circumstance in which a district court can go back and resentence after sentence has been imposed, and that that period is 7 days.
Because it was an erroneous sentence? I don't follow your Rule 35.
No, my claim is that there is no jurisdiction, period.
Because of Rule 35?
No. My argument is that Rule 35 is the only possible extension, and so I'm not sure it's not actually a fortiori proof, but what I'm trying to do is...
It's a straw man argument.
What? Excuse me?
It's a straw man argument. Rule
no.
35 is the only way. Rule 35 doesn't work, therefore you can't do it.
Well, I don't know if it's a straw man argument. I mean,
you set it up and knock it down.
What I'm saying is that to the extent that there is only some way in which a district court can go back and change a sentence, it is that, and this doesn't fit that.
Rule 35.
Right, and therefore, and this
you
is not
set up a straw man that doesn't work and shoot it down.
Well, there. But the point is, the point ultimately, whether we're going to go into a logical analysis or not, is that there is no basis for the district court to now render what were originally concurrent supervised release terms and render them now consecutive prison terms.
Well, what about the conduct of your client?
Well, the conduct of my client gets him revoked.
Why do you want to argue this? Do you want to make it impossible to get concurrent probation?
No, I want it. No, I don't.
You see what happens, though. Judge Schroeder is absolutely right. If we were to hold this way, then the judges down below would simply set it up so that it always be consecutive.
Well, but ultimately, people aren't supposed to violate supervised release. Right? I do want to have this because if a judge does impose a concurrent supervised release term, that later on the ultimate prison term that's imposed is less. One is not supposed to do it. Judge Brewster said in San Diego, we're all on probation. We're not supposed to somehow or other violate the law. So, I mean, I understand as a policy argument, yes, perhaps I could win this small battle and make the war much more difficult.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, I'm not here to do a systemic analysis. I am here to help Mr. Cruz.
Right.
So, but essentially what the...
Oh, did you... Okay.
So, I mean, the point is that in looking at this, in this was not a modification of a term of supervised release. Right? And under the Navarro case that's cited by the government, and this court said, you know, we're not, when you go back and modify, Rule 35 has nothing to do with that. All right? This is a modification of a term of supervised release. But this is different. We're no longer within the ambit of supervised release. We have ended supervised release. We are now into the point of imposing an additional prison term. And by imposing that prison term, by those consecutive prison terms, the court has essentially rendered what was a concurrent supervised release term now a consecutive prison term. And that is beyond the scope of what I think the district court had. And also, it would really be beyond what the scope of the district court had at the time of the original sentencing. Because at the time, the sentences were to run concurrent under the grouping provision. So since they were to be run concurrent.
Are there any pre-guideline cases where a judge imposes concurrent sentences and then there's a violation of probation or parole, and the defendant's brought back, and the judge then imposes a consecutive sentence?
Well, nobody ever raised jurisdiction before, so, I mean, I'm...
Is there any cases in other circuits on your
no.
side? But
no.
Aren't they against you?
No, this is... Well, the cases in the other circuits that this court had relied on in Jackson, again, we're all relying on the construction of 3624. 3624 was saying that because it says that they have to be concurrent at the time of, or when they're supposed to be served concurrently, that therefore when they're revoked, they have to be imposed concurrently. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you go back to what was the original sentence at the time. Since the sentences were supposed to be concurrent under the grouping provisions, so were the supervised release terms. And by rendering them consecutive, the judge modified that sentence. This was not a modification of a term of supervised release. This was a modification of the sentence. That's why I'm saying there's no jurisdiction.
Am I correct in thinking that your argument makes Jackson wrong? You can't
no.
do what was done under Jackson?
No, you could do absolutely what was done under Jackson. Because in Jackson, the closely related cases, the supervised release terms were revoked and served concurrently. Those terms were made concurrent. The one that was rendered consecutive was the one that was an unrelated case out of Missouri.
So it's the grouping.
Yes.
Yes.
The grouping.
Where we started.
Okay. All right, thank you. Well, no, I'll stay. I just want a few more minutes for rebuttal. Okay.
You've more than used your time.
Good morning, Your Honors. Christopher Tenorio for the United States. May it please the Court. There's a couple key distinctions here as to why Jackson makes absolutely, or there's absolutely no difference between this case and Jackson. First of all, contrary to what's implied, Judge Keep, at the time of the original sentence, had no option but to impose the supervised release terms concurrently. And that's because Section 3624E, the same one that is analyzed in Jackson, says whenever, whether they're federal or state, whenever there are more than one term of supervised release, they're going to run concurrently. So it's not a matter of her limiting her options at that point, whether she could have done concurrent or consecutive. What she could have done that might have made this differently is say, well, I'm just going to impose one term of supervised release and not the other. Now, we under 3583, there are three important points in the procedure that we look at: the time of sentencing, the time of release from imprisonment, and the time of revocation. At the time of sentencing, Section 3583A provides that a court may impose a term of supervised release unless it's...
Could she have imposed a sentence on one of the counts that was stacked, and on the other, is there any way she could have suspended imposition of sentence?
Well, she could have just given supervised release term on one of the counts of conviction and not the other. What 3583A provides is that you may impose it unless you're required to by statute or it's a first-time domestic violence offense. Both of these offenses were under 18 U.S.C. 922, which does not, within that statute, mandate a supervised release term. So the only option that she chose was to give two terms of supervised release. Now, whether or not she imposes those, she has to consider the terms under Section 3553, which delineate all the considerations. Now, the next important point is at the time...
She was required to make them concurrent, two sentences.
Right, and that we get from, at the time, the Section 3624E, when he is released from imprisonment, all the terms of supervised release must run concurrently. And that's what it provides. So she did not have a choice. Even if she said, I want them to run consecutively, the statute says that they run concurrently, whether they're from the same court, different federal courts, or from another state. Then...
So where does she get the power to impose consecutive sentences on the supervised release violation?
That's what brings us to the third point, the revocation of the supervised release. Then, based on Jackson and the other cases that it cites, we go to 3583E3, which provides the jurisdiction for us to revoke supervised release.
What is the relevance of the grouping? Doesn't grouping mean that you're supposed to kind of treat them all together like one?
Frankly, Your Honor, I don't believe it has any weight whatsoever. The grouping might have something to do with the imprisonment sentence. The courts did not cite that as being relevant in these cases on the imposition of supervised release following revocation. And, frankly, there's no statute that says that that should be taken into consideration. All that we do have is that Section 3583E3 provides that you can revoke. You go to Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 32.1, not 35, to develop the procedure. And then, to answer, Your Honor, your question, whether how she got the power to provide consecutive sentences, that comes from 3584A, and that was recognized in Jackson and all of its cases.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
If these are drug offenses and you have two sales and they're similar and they're fairly close together, and so you're required to group them and to make one is of 8 ounces and one is of 50 grams and one is 100 grams, and so you group them, so you've got 100. Isn't this how it works? So
pretty
you get
much,
150.
Yes.
So that determines the range?
It does. It does. In the original sense.
The presumptive range or whatever it is. And so can the judge, if they're grouped and you get that range, can the judge then impose consecutive sentences once
Yes.
they've been grouped?
I believe so. First you go to the underlying statute and then to the guidelines. And now, of course, since the guidelines are advisory, if the court considers the other factors under 3553 and says, no, we don't have to group here because of A, B, and C.
Let's go back to the old system of the
okay.
mandatory. Could the judge have grouped them, said this gives me for this group a range of 5 years to 10 years, and I'm going to impose two consecutive 8-year terms?
Well, there's a couple ways that they could. One, they could by departure, but also...
Yeah, but it would be a departure.
Yes, I believe so. Or to say that the two events were not part of the same transaction.
Right.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't group them.
Then you wouldn't be grouping.
That's true. That's true.
It just seems to me... I did a certain amount of sentencing in my younger days, and, I always sort of adhered to the approach that once I sentenced someone, that was it. And here you have concurrent sentences imposed, and then they come back and... you make them consecutive. It's just it seemed right to me.
Well, I understand the concern.
Well, what you're looking at is E3, and it says you revoke a term of supervised release, and then it says what can happen and what can't happen and what the limitations are. And you're saying that the sentence here was within E3.
Correct. Absolutely. And it was made, and you're able to make it consecutive or concurrent under 3584.
Because you could revoke a term of supervised release, which would be both of them, I guess, in this case, and then depending on what the felony is, you can give 5, 3, or 2 years in prison.
Correct. And here
that's what she did.
Yes, they were both 2 years put together, made it, or actually 12 on one, 24 on the other.
Read me that language.
In 3583, it provides that. The court may, after considering factors set forth in Section 3553, revoke a term of supervised release and require the defendant to serve in prison all or part of the term of supervised release authorized by statute for the offense that resulted in such term of supervised release. And then it goes on, pursuant to the Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure applicable to revocation of probation or supervised release. And then the later language limits it to no more than 2 years if it is a Class C or D felony, which was the case here.
Well, where does it say that you can undo a concurrent sentence and turn it into a consecutive...
To consecutive terms, Your Honor?
Yeah.
That comes directly from the Jackson case, which says that Section 3584... is applicable.
In the Jackson case, you had two cases from California were stacked, huh? Then you had the Missouri one, which is
also stacked originally.
But doesn't it follow from revoking the term of supervised release that the term is revoked, including the concurrent sentences part?
Yes, it does. And also, I think that in Jackson, they were all three sentences were concurrent. Upon revocation, there was two that were concurrent, one that went consecutive. And what they went to is said that 3584 explicitly says that multiple terms of imprisonment imposed at the same time, the terms may run concurrently or consecutively. And those cases, Jackson and all the ones that it cited to, said that specifically applies also in terms of revocation of supervised release. Nothing limits the discretion of the district court at that point. Now, to get back to your concern that what could the judge have done at the time of originally sentencing, what she did was say you are on two terms of supervised release. You're going to get a benefit that they're only going to run for 3 years total because they're running concurrently. But you're on notice that any time you commit an offense, which he did, you can serve time for those terms of supervised release. Now,
wait, you know, I guess I'm not understanding what's going on here. He got what was sentenced did he get?
Originally, his original sentence, 60. It was 65 months in custody, and then two consecutive terms of 3 years supervised release.
And
two concurrent.
Concurrent. Excuse me if I misspoke. Two concurrent terms.
Of 3 years.
3 years.
And when it was revoked, what did he get?
He received 36 months sentence, which is based on 24 months for one term of supervised release and 12 months for the other. And that was consistent with the guidelines, which required 36
months. You can only have
36 months. So it comes down.
I thought the guidelines required 24 months.
No, 24 months per term maximum. So he got no more than 24 months for either term, but a total of 36 months.
So he got an extra 12 months as a result of.
Well, no, he got 24 months for the revocation of one term and 12 months for the revocation of the other term. And he could have gotten up to 3 years because each term of supervised release was 3 years.
But if you took them separately, the maximum would have been 2 years on one, 2 years on the other.
Correct. So if he had only been on one term of supervised release, he could only have received 24 months.
Okay.
Well, you know,
it's 12 months.
I'd just like the American citizens and the audience to kind of understand the sentencing guidelines and how beautiful they are and how consistent they are and how they're more complicated than the Internal Revenue Code.
I believe so, and unfortunately what we have to do is read them in conjunction with the statute that limits the maximum but also allows for consecutive time.
Okay, I think we understand that.
Now, thank you.
Now their application is discretionary.
Correct. Although they are.
Salvation has arrived.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case just argued is submitted. The next case listed, Yuan versus United States, has been dismissed. The next case for argument is the First Alliance mortgage matter versus Chizik.